The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Case 29 from the Blue Cliff Record. Dasui's It Goes Along With It. The Pointer. When fish swim through, the water is muddied. When birds fly by, feathers drop. He clearly discriminates host and guest. He penetratingly distinguishes initiate and outsider, just like a bright mirror in its stand, like a bright pearl in the palm of the hand. When a native comes, a native is reflected. When a foreigner comes, a foreigner is reflected. The sound is obvious, the form is evident. But say, why is it like this? As a test, I'm citing this old case. Look. A monk asked Da Sui, when the Kalpa fire flares up and the great cosmos is destroyed, I wonder, will it not perish? Da Sui said, it will perish. Then it will be gone with the other? It will be gone with the other. So we're looking into this case as the central point of our practice. In some way, we could pick any point, any point we pick, any point we turn to, is the center of it all. Sometimes we get so concerned about where should I be, which is the right way. But our Zen way is quite wide and vast. And the teaching is that everything is here. This very mind, this very body, it is all that you need. And this very mind, this very body, this very world, that you live in, and in some ways we all live in the same world and we can compare notes, but in some other way we each live in the world of our perception. It appears that we're looking at the world outside of us, but as we look closer we can see what the Buddha discovered, that the world and the self arise together. The only world you can know is the world that is filtered through, through your senses. And in some way it's extraordinary that we can communicate at all. Try comparing notes with a sibling or with a good friend about what happened, you'll find that the history that each one of us is living with is not a history external to us. It's not what happened, it's how we understand what happened, how we remember. So there is this creative engagement in reality at every moment. And our work in Zen is to, in a sense, to move closer and closer. We say to close the gap between yourself and yourself, to close the gap between the world and you. And we cannot do this by an act of willpower. Willpower is a very weak force in the universe. And on our days of retreats, when we do this intense training, all of us come to the point of exhaustion. This is not what's wrong with retreat that we should fix, but rather this is the feature. This is the place where we keep trying and trying and trying. And at some point, we give up, not because we've heard it's a good idea to surrender, but we slowly, maybe we are surrendered. We perhaps notice habits of mind. And of course, what we notice is, I think, for all of us, so embarrassing. We all know better. We all have read the books. We're all Zen students here. And yet, a reactivity arises. And some of the reactivity that arises in each one of us is new and novel, but all of us have our own hinge points, our own limps that come back again and again, these places that we have worked so hard, wonderfully hard to understand, to heal, and this work of understanding and healing so important for us human beings. But these places that we come back to, that we're dragged back to, we thought, oh, I'm over that. I'm no longer a petty person. My years of Zazen have made me quite a wonderful and equanimous person. And of course, we think like that, and then we have to act like that, and then we get into real trouble. Any idea you have about yourself, inflated idea, I am a mature Zen practitioner, or the other side, equally limiting, I am a terrible person. In the reading we did earlier, a letter from Da Wei to one of his students, observing the one who is dim and dull. Clearly his student has written to him and said, you know, I'm really care about this path, but I haven't had any great experiences, and it's probably not possible for me because I am dim and dull. So we all have these stories, not bad, not good, but the stories are the only way we have to enter. Zen is a story. Buddhism is a story. It's a story that points quite beautifully, I think, to some of the realities of our human life. The story is not the thing. The teachings are not the thing itself. The thing itself is alive. And in this koan, we're looking at the kalpa fire. When the kalpa fire flares up, and as Melissa said, the traditional teaching of the four parts of each kalpa, this incomprehensible long time, the emerging, the abiding, the destruction, and the void, the emptiness, this coming into being, something happening, and then this falling apart, and falling apart into nothingness. And our, you know, whether this is true or not, whether there are things called eons, is not so much a concern for me, maybe for some people. But the Buddha at one point said, followers of my way take no positions for or against anything. If we could argue, well, there really are four. Well, no, there are only three. Number four is part of number three. We could go on like that. But the important thing as we're practicing is to notice what comes alive in our own experience. These teachings are left to us, given to us, passed to us by people who looked into the matter quite deeply, quite intensely. And these are the notes, the love notes they have sent to us. So noticing what arises when you hear of this pattern, this arising or emerging, this abiding, and this falling apart, as Melissa said so beautifully last night, this is how it is for us human beings. Thoughts and feelings, chapters of our life come and go, and time is not, though we can measure it on our watches and with all kinds of scientific timers, in reality it's much more dreamlike. The moment we're in has no duration. Here we are, and this moment with no duration extends backwards in time and forwards in time. And we can see with the children in our life how quickly things change. For me, a week or a month, even a year, begins to be hard to distinguish, but little ones come and go so quickly, come and change and change and change and change. We can see this in the green beings of the world, the mighty white pines that were our cathedral yesterday. Here decades and decades, maybe decades more, maybe not. And the marigolds in the front garden, so wild and wonderful, so generous in their orange blossoming, so happy to sit in the hot sun. Just yesterday, Michael and I were constructing cages to keep the rabbits from eating the little sprouts, the little marigold sprouts. Now they're quite bushy and robust. But the frost will come, and they will fall apart, turn brown, and we'll pull them up and put them on the compost pile. The marigold emerges and abides, is destroyed, falls apart, and then there is the in-between period. One of the helpful things of this kind of schema is allowing us to appreciate the different qualities of our life, the different mind realms we journey through. Often we come to Zen and we're quite clear that there is a particular mind state that we have heard about and we've read about it, and it is certainly the one we want. As we practice, we begin to see that, yes, sometimes this mind state, perhaps some clarity or ease or spaciousness arises, but it is impossible to maintain. Clarity lasts as long as clarity does. The sun shines, and then maybe the night comes, maybe the clouds come. Who knows? But this coming and going is the nature of our life, and perhaps these four words, four kinds of spaces, can allow us to appreciate the many worlds we travel through. And the wonderful thing about Sesshin is you don't have to try to go anywhere. In fact, if you try to go somewhere, oftentimes you'll get yourself quite tangled up. And then you're in the tangled up place. No way out. But there is a life, there is this liveliness that is not outside of us, that we are, you are a kind of liveliness, a brief and fluid kind of liveliness, and you are not in charge of the universe. This is always quite a disappointment for me when I realize it, but maybe it's a good thing. But you too, you're not even in charge of, not even in charge of your mind or your breath. But you do have choices, and these choices you make, the choices that we make, make all of the difference. The choices we make transform our world, have the possibility of transforming our world, not through the exertion of muscle and willpower, but transforming our world by coming into some new relationship. The Buddha's final words were, proceed with care. Go forward, go on, go into your life with caring, with appreciation. Not so much watch out for the danger that's coming, but that this quality of compassion is so much a part of what we are practicing. And in some ways, we're not practicing being compassionate, because you have some idea of what compassionate is, and whatever idea you have is quite limited. But compassion points to some way of being. Maybe some kind of gentleness and vulnerability. Maybe compassion points to a kind of surrender. The possibility of moving out of complaining mind. How come this is not like that? How come I am like this and not like that? How come they? All of this the mind does quite naturally. But to begin to see even that with this kind of open-hearted, letting Dogen's wonderful definition of generosity, letting others be others and letting ourselves be ourselves. And if you think you know who you are, you're wrong. Whatever image you have, whatever story you tell, is only part of the great emerging, the great universal emerging that is happening very particularly in you. The sensation in your knees and your back, the stories that rise, the judgments, good, bad, dull, clear, It all comes and goes. And this teaching of the of this koan, looking into one, this kalpa, fire, and for me, this practice is a kind of fire. When you come and sit down in the zendo, you are walking into the fire. The fire of aliveness, and our beings, we are fire beings. It is oxygen that goes to our cells and burns each cell, generating its tiny packet of energy to do what it knows how to do, which you could never give it instructions. If you had to give instructions to any cell in your body, that cell would be a goner. But there is this intelligence. There is this a wondrous functioning. Lin-Chi says, your wondrous functioning is no different from the wondrous functioning of the Buddhas and the ancestors. So we come into the fire and burn up with our, in the middle of our tiredness, burn up in the middle of our irritation, burn up in the middle of our great appreciation of our love, of our ease. But can you, I believe it was a Dharma holder, Michael, who invited us wholeheartedly to give ourself away, to give yourself away, give away whatever you have, whatever you think you have, give it away and enter here, whether it is the arising, whether it is abiding, whether it is the falling apart, whether it is after all of that happens and there is nothing left. Chinul says, at the end of the road, it's like an iron wall. So to value the territory and to willingly enter this fire, to abide, to participate in this falling apart, this necessary falling apart, because we have all constructed these tiny little houses, and we all keep trying to defend these houses that are utterly illusory. The idea of self that we defend. How dare you say that about me? How dare you think that about me? I'll show you. Can we notice this, the construction business, and can we have the courage to see what happens if we let it be? You cannot deconstruct the ego through using the ego. You cannot, as William Blake said, you cannot storm the gates of heaven, but we can, you can, I can join in, align with this. And the this teaching, too, coming into the fire, this teaching that it is already here. It is already here. The circumstances of this moment are the exact circumstances you need to wake up. Your world fits you like a glove. Your world, my world, is like a mirror. Earlier we recited the jeweled mirror samadhi, and the teaching here in the pointer that the like a bright mirror on its stand. When a native comes, a native is reflected. When a foreigner comes, a foreigner is reflected. This teaching that the world you encounter is a bright mirror that generously reflects whatever comes before it. So anger comes and anger is perfectly reflected. Openness comes and openness is perfectly reflected. So the content of this moment is everything that is needed. And in the teacher's response, so the student asks, will it, I wonder, in the great kalpa fire that flares up, the great cosmos is destroyed, I wonder, will it not perish? And Dasui says, it will perish. One translation of this, another one, is just perish. Will it not perish? I suspect that the teacher's response is simply the word perish. Chinese does not have a lot of pronouns and subjects, but there is just perishing. So the student says, will it perish? And the teacher responds by giving the student back in some ways. Will it perish? It will perish. And his second question, then will it be gone with the other? The teacher repeats the student's question, not as a question. It will be gone with the other. Now, when a Zen teacher or any teacher or our life gives us exactly what we have, often it feels like a dirty trick. Like, why don't you give me something better than this? I'm bringing you my problem, and I would like you to fix it for me. But from the perspective of awakening, from the perspective of the potential of transforming our life, transforming our suffering into wisdom, the only place to start is right here, and the only ground you can sprout in is the ground of your life, the particularness of your life. And so in Zen, we treat these arisings not as the truth to be worked out. Well, let me figure out how I came to be this way. But each arising is itself your awakening. Dawi spoke to his student, wrote to his student, said, dim and dull is how you need to operate. Dim and dull is your resource. So if our problems, if our difficulties, if our sticking points are a resource, then all of us are quite wealthy. And so we come and we don't look around and don't talk with each other. And this is the great gift we give. This is how we give others to others. And this is how we give ourselves to ourselves. What if it's not a mistake? What if this place, this mind that's on fire, this heart that is broken, this life that makes no sense, this loss. What if nothing needs to be done? but nothing needs to be done, but to stay long enough to be undone. Nothing needs to be done, but you need to hang around. I need to hang around long enough so that I can be undone. I can be untangled. I can come into this intimate contact and touch and be touched by this world. And the great Kalpa fire, the great flood, the great disintegration is then part of this cycle. Sometimes it seems like we're in the washing machine here on Sesshin and going around and around one more time and one more time. And I thought I was clean, I thought I had enough, but I guess not. I keep coming back. And so we support each other in this great and courageous and foolish enterprise of waking up and of being human. When the Kalpa fire flares up and the great cosmos is destroyed, I wonder, will it not perish? Thus we said, it will perish. The student says, then it will be gone with the other. Dasui says, it will be gone with the other. Thank you. So please sit comfortably and we'll make our U-shaped with cushions in the back. Yeah, Will.
Thank you so much for that wonderful talk, David. Let's see. So the first time I encountered this on years ago, I just heard about it, and it terrified me, actually. And I thought it was sort of, I mean, I think that I was thinking of clarity or ease or enlightenment as a thing. And this was a koan saying, you can't really trust it. It's you know, it goes away. And I can see the sort of mistake there, but I also wonder then, you know, my mind kept catching on the phrase it and the other, you know, which are, you know, very Zen somehow. You're sort of thinking, well, what is the it and what is the other? You know, they're both, you know, from a grammatical point of view, they're both third person, right? They're both, there's an it over here, and there's another over here. So I guess I'm wondering what's the other. You know, what is the, what are those things in this column? I mean, it seems like it is I, and the other is the world. But that also seems that, well, then why don't they just say that?
Again, this koans are not meant to be figured out
with
the cognitive mind,
yeah.
which is what you're doing, which is often a first step for all of us.
Yeah.
It and the other, these are the points when we work with these as koans in Doksan, when people are doing koan practice. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what we look at. What is the it?
Yeah.
What is the other?
Yeah.
And this could be a valuable thing to just keep asking the question, but not expect, I mean, I'm not going to answer you. I don't know if these three guys want to answer you. That's okay. But I think it would be kind of off the point in a way. Yeah.
But the point is the question.
Yeah. And the point is the, wait, what?
Yeah.
Well, and I read that the response, you know, David said, we don't know the Chinese and all that sort of stuff, but I was reading a Japanese teacher commenting on this, and apparently in Japanese, he doesn't say perishes or anything, he just says, eh. The letter E, that's it.
Just
a which is in Japanese, apparently. I don't know Japanese either. It's just a way of going,
will they perish?
Yep. Big nod. You're on it. And then, you know, the persistence, right, of the questioner. But, oh, come on. And then, but then he says some other word in Japanese that means, yeah, that's how it is. And so there's some, it's just this positive embracing of that student, as you know, that's what I want for all of us, for you too, to positively embrace the questioner.
And I guess to face, if you're afraid that the world is
then you start with fear. The fear is the place, not necessarily the question.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Thanks,
Will. Yeah, Beverly.
First, I'd like to apologize for leaving.
It's fine.
I just sprained my knees.
Yep.
I don't think I can say.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw that you went out to get tissues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks for sharing your tears.
Yeah.
Right, each one of us traveling through the many realms, and this is a place where it arises, right? And sometimes we can talk about it, sometimes we can't, but just coming forward with the tear, this is your contribution, so thank you.
I just want to add, all responses are valid, right? So Will's thoughtfulness is a response, and your tears are a response, and whatever else is going on with everybody in the room, turning towards it with these loving arms, this is how it is for me right now. It's all right. It's good. No need to apologize.
Kept being curious by the four stages that were mentioned. So it's never in different stages to me. It's always, they're all happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets,
yeah,
it's more confusing. I mean, even the emptiness at the end is right smack in the middle.
And so important not to be fooled by any kind of distinctions we make, right? To stay... I really appreciate you staying with your own experience rather than saying, well, I guess they're not all here. I guess they're separate. But you're saying, oh, yeah, you can just say that. But it's so much wilder and much more fun than four categories. And it is true. Yeah, all of this is happening right here in this moment. And maybe we can notice more of one than another, or maybe not. But all of these words are cutting up something that cannot be cut, one continuous fabric.
And sometimes you think you're just getting involved in one of them, and then you realize the other one's popping up. So you didn't expect it.
And it is so confusing. It is so confusing.
And I also want to say, Anne, that's true of a lot. You know, like you did the 10 Oxfording pictures, and you try to go, oh, all right, there's a sequence. But those, to me, are all happening at the same time, too. You know, and Dogen it tells us that practice and enlightenment are happening at the same time. So all of our attempts to put something in some sequential order are pointing us in the wrong direction. And your comment points us back in the right direction. So deep bows. Thanks.
And it's even true for our lifespan, right? Mm-hmm. We think, well, when I was in my teens, when I was in my 20s, 30s, you know, this, that, the other thing. But all we know is what's going on now. And all of that stuff is selectively remembered and constructed into a narrative. And we were listening to a podcast a few months back by a woman psychologist who was talking about you can write the story of your life and be really interested in how each chapter ends. And I think it was a woman. And anyway, it doesn't matter. But that if you end each chapter with a success, you're probably a kind of happy person. And if you end it with a, oh, then that terrible thing happened, then maybe you're constructing your life in a negative way. And she said, you know, when she works with people, she tries to change where the chapter ends for people. Because it's inevitable that we're going to create categories and stories and narratives. But to really realize, to be honest with our own body, heart, mind, this is the only thing we can know. And just barely, because as Michael said, it's all so confusing.
Thank you. How about someone else? Yeah. Yeah. Tom.
Yeah, I'm dying to say something. Yes, it's actually a great talk, and I just really... But I'm not quite sure what to say. But just, I think what really grabbed me was being that, watch it all happening, and don't take sides, and just see what happens, something like that. That how difficult it is not want to do something, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so well put, and it reminds me when I did my life coach training, they said, don't try to solve your client's problems, but be curious about how they're going to solve their problems. And this, what you're saying, I think it applies for us. We can be curious. I'm in a total fix. I don't know how I'm going to get out of this, but this possibility of not taking sides. And as you say, it's so hard because immediately we want to jump in on one side. I'm going to do more of this. I'm going to do less of this. But this kind of open-hearted, and I love the kind of humor you're bringing. Like, wow, I just get to watch the show here. That it will take care of itself.
Yeah. And you're the show for yourself.
Yeah.
Don't even have to separate yourself by perceiving these things, right?
Yeah. The show's running
24/7. and the clicker stopped working. It changed channels. Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Steph. Dave.
I was taken in by when you called the teachings their love notes.
Love notes.
Love notes.
Yeah.
And for me, like when I hear the word teaching, the immediate response is to learn. But a love note, like you don't learn from a love note, you like receive it in some way. I remember being really young and getting a love note, and I was like, oh, it's so joyful to receive it.
Yeah.
So receiving. Framing it that way as a love note, it's, I love that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful image of how we receive. Because I think a lot of us are still trying to figure out the teachings. And I better
I better understand what he's saying. But this, a love note, something else entirely. Yeah, it's so beautiful. I just wanted to tell you how beautiful you are.
You also have to admit they have a strange love language.
That's right. Yeah.
What is Buddha? Dried shit stick. Love you yet.
It's how you read a love note. So you can read it as information, like, oh, she thinks I'm beautiful. Is it something I'm wearing? or it's just...
Well, why don't we end on the love note? So let's restore the zendo and sit for a moment.